Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, as I steal Drew Mandel's intro. And welcome to a special edition of the Manitoba Moose End of Season Roundtable, kind of a splicing of a legal curve and some of the folks from that you'll recognize from the Manitoba Moose. I'm joined by Daniel Fink, who's the play-by-play voice, and Austin Saragusa, Moose TV reporter. And we're going to do a couple of hours of chatting. We're going to talk to head coach Pascal Vincent. We're going to talk to general manager Craig Heisinger, also known as Zinger. And of course, we've got some players. We've got a couple of Jets prospects and Jeff Malott, who's a rookie that, you know, not a lot of people knew about before this year, but they sure know his name. And we're also going to talk to the Twin Towers on that back end in Dylan Sandberg and Johnny Kovacevic. Okay, well, speaking of teams and the guy who runs the show, we're going to be joined right now by Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent. He's joining us here on the end of season roundtable. Hello, coach. How are you?
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
What's going on? You're right over there somewhere.
Yeah, we're pretty close.
You know, coach, we had our end of season media availability on yesterday, and we had a chance to speak with you. But I know it hasn't been a long time since, you know, the season ended. Obviously, it was just on Sunday. But when you just think back, when you reflect back on what this year has meant to you as a coach and to your players, what does it make you think of?
I feel very much privileged. It's a season that, you know, we're a creature of habits, and then come August and you don't know if you're going to play, and then September, October, and then you don't know, and Christmas time, and then we're still not sure. We wanted to start in December. We couldn't do it. So at some point you're thinking, okay, are we going to play or not? And we got to a point where it was a big question mark, and then got a call, and it was Zinger, and then he said, yeah, we're going to play. We just finished preparing a schedule. We're going to stay in the Canadian division and play against Toronto. And Stockton joined the division late in the discussions. So we had to adjust the schedule because Stockton joined in. And then when I think about this year, it's, you know, it was such a different season in so many ways, like playing at the Iceplex and not being able to communicate the way we did with the players. Even I'm usually with the Jets staff quite a bit during the season. Not I couldn't do that. We had different bubbles, respecting the protocols for our safety, and our guys did a great job at staying safe. But it was a different season, a season that I said that before, and it's very true. I will remember this year for the rest of my life. The group that we had was absolutely amazing. They just wanted to get better. They wanted to work hard. I think we all felt quite lucky to play hockey and to do what we love the most. But everything was different. So we had to adapt. I mean, if there's one word that comes to mind, it was you needed to adapt and be quick on your feet to, adjust to the situation at the time. And you're always living in a little bit of fear. Like, you get tested every day, and every day around that time of the day, we would get the results and hoping that there is no one tested positive. So it's been just a different year, but so good, I think, for the development of our players, because we had the chance to play quite a few young players and put them in different situations, but more so having a chance to practice them way more than usual, because we only played 36 games, and that 17 game stretch that we had at home gave us a chance to really work on different skills set and work on different things that they needed to be. They needed to improve. So it was a year where we got to learn about each other in a different way than we usually do. So it was different, intense at times, and at times we wanted to go faster, but it was slow. Bunch of games, bunch of practices. It was just different, but good.
I guess recent memory leads us to that long homestand and the breaks in between games, but the team started off the season on this incredible stretch of games. I think it was 16 games in 27 days or something like that. That's a heavy, heavy schedule. How did you guys get through that with pretty much a 500 record?
Lots of coffee, Dan. Lots of coffee. That's how we got through it. Well, we had, like I said, we had to adapt, and our training camp was weird. Like, we had 12 players to start, and then we wanted to test those guys, and we wanted to evaluate them, and we knew we couldn't call up anyone from the East Coast, so we had to carry more players. We didn't know exactly who would be with the taxi squad, and again, the injuries, you never know when they happen and to who. So we needed to adapt. So we carried more players. Once the season got started, we had more players, and we had to adapt. So we adjusted the length of our practices, and we practiced an hour later than we usually do, so they can sleep a little bit more. Just little things, little tweaks that we did during the season that could help the players, and I think it worked.
You talk about adapting, Pazzi, and one of the things that you and all the players kind of had to adapt to was that change from, you know, Bell MTS Place to Bell MTS Iceplex. I mean, we talk about the job that the operations team did here in the arena just to make it, you know, feel like home. But what was it like adapting for the coaching staff, I guess, making that transition from, you know, the downtown rink here to your practice rink?
Really, it wasn't much of a change for us. I mean, my main office is here at the Iceplex, so I spend most of my time here during the season anyway. The biggest change, the one I like the most, and I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that, and you guys will smile when I say it, I didn't have to wear a suit. That was a big, that was a lot of fun to me. It was like Christmas, I used to say. But no, that was the only, well, we had to change. Obviously, we had to adjust our routine because we're used to, we morning skate downtown and the guys went home and went back to the rink for the game, or we had our meetings downtown most of the time. We had to adjust our schedule, our routine on game days. But other than that, to me, it was quite easy. The only difference, I'd say, because of the rink, the way it's shaped, there's a part of the ice I couldn't see during the game. So there's a part of the game when the puck was in that corner on the bench side, I didn't know. And there's no board, and there's no nothing I could watch on the screen to see what was going on the ice. So there's a part of the ice I didn't see. So I spent more time watching that corner in my post game video. But other than that, it was, the guys did an amazing job. I mean, the crew and you guys, and to adjust and then to make it the best possible as we could. And I mean, Brad did an amazing job as well, as you guys know. I said it yesterday, this guy's a genius. But the investment too, I mean, it was, that's not free, right? To make that rink being AHL ready, and there's a cost to it. And there was an investment from the ownership. So was a lot of things behind the scene that happened, but to me personally and as a coach, was pretty good.
We're joined by Moose head coach Pascal Vincent. You know, coach, one of the things that you talked about 13 months ago with me in I guess April of 2020 was this idea of you're going to see what guys take advantage of the opportunity. And, yes, you know, we spoke about that again in December, and now you've had a chance to evaluate. And I know you're still going to do more evaluations on your players, but it seemed to me, and you relied especially, and you talked to me about this, the idea of not using a lot of rookies. I mean, veterans, sorry. You had a lot of young guys, you know, first year, second year pros in your lineup on a nightly basis. So how many, and I'm not asking for specifics, or you can if you want, but how many players did you see just step up and seize that opportunity that they were presented with?
I think most of them, I don't want to go into the names or stuff like that, but most of them, the first-year pro, were coming from either college or junior, some from Europe. And either they had a good start or a strong finish. All of them hit the wall at some point. Some of them was early in the season, just the being able to adapt. Some of them were really good at first and struggled in the middle and had a strong finish. So, but – at some point, they all took advantage of the opportunity. And for some others, and you weren't able to see that because there was nobody in the ring, but for some others, it was practicing and being evaluated during practices. Like, we had guys that didn't play many games, less than 10 games, but they still have a good report. Their post-season evaluation is still good because they practiced the right way. I think what we did really well early in the season, Dave, is it was a hard training camp, and we knew that for different reasons. We wanted to establish a way of thinking early in the season, and we wanted to test the conditioning of our players. And our guys showed the combination of that and our guys being able to sustain the pace of those practices. And some of our veterans, like, we lost Jimmy Oligny along the way. But he was one of the guy early in the season saying, hey, if you want to play for that team, you're going to have to work. And you're going to have to work hard. And it starts in practices. And it created a momentum. And it became a standard for all of them. We had a good season, Dave. We had a good season as far as development. Yes, we won some games and we had good stretch of winning and the points, but it was way beyond that this year. The goal was to evaluate all of them. And then until the end, like Vladdy, we didn't promise him any games. And the way he was practicing, we told him what we decided. Okay, we have to give him a game at some point. We need to see him in a real game. So it's a weird season, and at the same time, a lot of people will benefit from that year, because even if it's not for the Moose or the Jets in the future, the way our guys played, we'll get those guys, some of our guys will get opportunities to play somewhere else and make a living out of it. So it was a very successful year.
Pazzi, I just want to roll back a little bit. You were mentioning, and you talked about him yesterday, but Brad Andrews, and he's a guy that, I mean, some folks might know because we see him on Global and things like that every once in a while, because he runs kind of the hockey or the business side and works in the hockey side as well, and kind of has his fingers everywhere throughout the Moose organization. But especially in a year like this, what does he mean to the hockey ops side?
Oh, he means a lot of he's taking care of a lot of headaches I would have. I mean, this guy is so detailed and he thinks ahead. Like, we had to plan. So we had 39 players that played at least one game. And that's not counting Brett Peterson that didn't play a single game. So 40 players. And all of them needed something special at some point. All of them needed to be on the same page. We had, as you know, we have a group chat, and the schedule is sent every day and it's detailed, and then we hit the road, and every day by the hour, as you guys know, it's detailed, and we sit down and we spend a lot of time together, but he's taking care of so much of those issues before they even arise. I think Brad is really good. Like, there's a lot of problems that could happen in a season and they just don't, because we solve them before they just happen. Just because he's detailed, and just having the American guys crossing the border, the European guys crossing the border, booking the buses, and there's so many things that he does. I don't know, like, his job description must be 20 pages long, because he does it all. And you know what? And interesting enough, when you talk to him about the game and what he thinks about the players, and it's really smart. He understands the game. He's played the game a little bit, and so he's got a real good eye to evaluate the game. This guy has a bright future in front of him, and he's a lawyer on top of it. Great man. He's amazing.
Pascal, you touched on it a little bit yesterday, but I just wanted to circle back on the job of your trainers, you know, Zach Salmonson and Kyle Vorio, especially in just this year, you know, where – players and staff, you know, have to test every day, and, you know, just with all the protocols in place, what can you say about the job of those two guys just in this season that was really, you know, really impacted by COVID?
So I had a good idea on what they were up for this year, because I went in the bubble last year with the Jets, and I could see the Jets guys and how hard they had to work to make it happen, just to stay safe. Everything had to be clean after every game, after every practice. And when I say everything, it's all the skates, all the gloves, all everything. Every piece of equipment has to be cleaned after a game. And then those guys are, you know, the injuries that happen in the season, they have to take care of that. But then making sure that they follow the protocols. We have to answer a survey every morning. We have to get tested, and managing that. And some guys not feeling right one night, and they get a call at 8 o'clock at night. And those guys were on 24/7 for 4 months. And, you know, they deserve the break. They really do, because they've been amazingly good. And we didn't have a lot of issue. And on top of it, like, you know, they had to evaluate the players, and then making sure the gym was safe for them. It is, I mean, I can go on and on and on, but there's no way this season happens if we don't have those guys. It just doesn't happen.
We're joined at the end of season Manitoba Moose Roundtable, hosted by Leo Curve, by Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent. Now, Coach, one of the things you guys didn't have this year was a captain. Peter Stojkovic retired in an unusual year. We saw him still on the ice, but as a linesman, not in his normal capacity as a defenseman. But and I know you used alternates. You used Christian Reichel, CJ Cease, Jimmy Olney, and Ashton Sautner as your four alternates. But is there a plan for next season? And I know this season just ended. It's hard to already start thinking about next season. But is there a goal, at least not necessarily a player you have in mind or you've picked, but that you would like to have a captain in place for your team next season?
I'd like that. This year was not, like I said, it was a different year. And because of the taxi squad, we had some guys going up and down. So we didn't know who would stay with us. So we know it would fluctuate from the Jets to the Moose. And you're not sure. Like, we had a good leadership group, but a lot of those players, we didn't know. We didn't know how they would gel together. But they did really early. So we don't want to name a captain, but in a normal season, you want a captain. And I have a few candidates in mind. We'll keep evaluating the season, the off season, and then think about who's coming next year and who's signed and who's not. And, so we'll evaluate this whole thing, 'cause that's something that's important to me. And I believe in that. Having a strong captain makes a difference. So we'll, in the best case scenario, we wanted a captain. We didn't. It turned out to be good, but we should have a captain by next year. And Storio, our former captain, I didn't have a chance to scream at him too much when he played for us, because he's such a good player, and he was working hard and trying to do everything right. So this year was enjoyable. I could scream at him a little bit because I didn't previously.
Coach, got a couple people asking about some of the prospects, so I guess we should give the people what they want since they've tuned in here. And I guess it's tough to say going forward where everybody lands, but I mean, with some of these guys who are on their entry level contracts or developing, trying to make that next step, who did a really good job this season of pushing themselves to achieve something better?
Well, I mean, to get the next contract or to move up, they all want to play in the NHL. I don't care what they tell you. Even the oldest veteran on your team, he's dreaming about the NHL. There's a part of us where we're still, and I know I've been there. Like, you're playing hockey, doesn't matter. You score zero goals in 200 games, you still hope that you're going to get a shot at the NHL. And those guys are dreaming about it. But I think they all did a good job to position themselves. It's not true. They all did what they had to do to position themselves to have a next contract at some point. I don't, like I said, Dan, I don't want to mention any name, because the reason for it, I could, but I'm going to forget one or two guys, and I won't be happy with myself. But it was a real good year, and we got to see who would step up. And that's the positive side about not having a captain or a leader, a strong leader, like we did in the past in Stojkovic or even Cormier, everybody had a voice. It started with Jimmy in the room. I know that for a fact. The other guy that was important to us was Gray Oback. He didn't stay here, and he was a Vancouver Canuck. And still, we told him from day one, listen, you're a moose for now, and we're going to treat you like a moose. And I think he appreciated that. And then and he was really good to Cole Perfetti at first. And remember early in the season, he had Todd and Lynch on the wing, and that line was really good. So I think they all did something good at some point that will, you know, they can use with their agents to manage, to negotiate something for the future. But it was, again, like as a group, and I just want to talk about the group. It was a real good season.
Pascal, so what's now on your plate for the next little while? You know, of course, the season's finally wrapped up, but I know the work for you doesn't stop. So what do you have plans for the next couple of months, anticipating hopefully that a season does get underway as normal next year?
Well, there's going to be a lot of studying from now. That's what we do in the summer. That's what I do. We're going to study quite a bit, study the playoffs, study what the trends, what works, what doesn't work, things that have worked in the past don't work, doesn't work anymore, or things that didn't think it would work will in the playoffs. So NHL playoffs is a good time to study, and study players as well. It's the next few days and until the end of the season, we're going to be skating the extra players that are not with the Jets but could be called up. So that's something we're going to do. We're also going to study the Canadian division, the Toronto and Montreal, and not so much Edmonton because the Jets are playing against them. So, but for what's next, be prepared for that. We're going to help any way we can the Jets guys for as long as we can. And then from there, it's going to be a full-on evaluation. We're gonna have a debrief with the whole staff next week, and it's going to raise a lot of questions, what we did right, what we did wrong, what we want to keep doing in the future. One thing that I really liked was the way we presented our special teams. I think Marty and Eric did an amazing job this year, and the way we did it and the way they did it, I really enjoyed it. I think it was really beneficial for the players. So little things like this that we've done, the skill days, I think I want to do that again, just finding ways to do it in the normal season. But it's like every summer, it's going to be a lot of studying, a lot of watching hockey, but from a different perspective, I'd say without emotions, which is different, and look at different part of the games that I don't usually have time to do during a regular season. I'll be watching the Florida series and see what's going on there and stuff like that. So it's going to be, it's always, so you have your season, or you prepare for a season and you adjust all year, and you win some, you lose some, and then you get into the playoffs and the goal is to win the cup. And then from there you evaluate what you just did and you adjust a few things that you've done, and then evaluate your own self and what you did and the staff, and try to get better. That's never ending, trying to get better. That's we have to stay on top of our craft, and then that's what we're going to do.
Okay, well, we're going to let you go here. We appreciate all the time you've given us today and throughout the course of the season, but just maybe one final thought on what Eric Comrie means to this organization. Made a major milestone, and I think probably something that needs to be recognized for, you know, becoming, after what he's undergone really the last two seasons, but achieving that all-times wins, franchise wins record earlier this year.
Well, what he means is he's a guy that, and you know him, Dave, if you meet Eric Comrie, you know, you have to block 30 minutes because he's going to talk for 30 minutes. But brilliant guy, right? He's very positive. He's well aware of what's going on around the planet, just not the hockey world, but what's going on in politics and everything. So very smart. He's a guy, what he means, he's a glue guy. That's what he is. He's a glue guy. He brings people to the fight, and he competes like nobody else every single day. Positive, competing hard, a real good human being, can have a chat about anything. He means a lot. He's a guy that we saw him at first when he was a young pro, and then he's been through so many things, traveled around the league, just because he's good and people wanted him and they gave him a chance, and for timing is everything at times. And then he came back to us, and to us, he means, he's the typical guy that you call an organizational player, because of his attitude, his work ethic, and the way he approaches every single day, adversity, good times, very humble. I mean, he loves the game like nobody else, right? He just loves the game, and he knows about the game. So he means a lot to this organization. I know we've been good to him, but it's been a real good relationship between Eric Comrie and the True North in general. I feel we're lucky to have this guy within the organization.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Pascal.
Anytime, Dave. Daniel, hey, Austin.
See you.
See you.
We're going to be bringing Jets 2017 third-round draft pick Johnny Kovacevic in his second year as a pro. He's going to be joining the end-of-season Manitoba Moose Roundtable, hosted by me, Dave Manuk, along with Daniel Fink and Austin Saragusa of the Manitoba Moose. Hey, Johnny, how are you?
Good. How are you, Dave?
I'm doing well. It's been a long time since I last spoke to you. But, you know, like, obviously the season ended for you a little bit earlier than everybody else because you suffered that injury in Toronto. But I was thinking about conversations you and I have had over the last couple of seasons, and I was thinking back to last year. Last year you were in that rotation with the young guys, and what look at the progression you've had. You went from in that rotation to an everyday guy to a guy who's playing 38 minutes in one game and on the top power play, top unit, sorry, for this Manitoba Moose team. What has that meant for you? And obviously you achieved this through your own hard work, but what has it meant to you as a player to have had that type of progression?
Yeah, I think when you get to look back at it now, yeah, it's you can really realize and appreciate kind of how far I've came since those, the first week last year, not the first week, the first half of the year being in that room, and not playing until I think it was the second week last year. And so, yeah, there have been some hard times, and obviously it's kind of natural with any challenge. Like, there's some times you might have doubts or fears or whatnot, and to be able to put together a pretty successful season like I had, and looking back to know where I came from, yeah, it's kind of special, and I don't know, I almost wouldn't want it any other way.
Johnny, in talking to Eric Dubois a little while ago, he said there was a point in the season where you kind of took it upon yourself to step to the fore, to step forward and say, you know what, I can make an effect on this team. What was it early on in the season that kind of led you to push forward and kind of make that step?
I think I was always trying to push for that. And then for me, it really clicked that one Belleville series. I think Jim, he broke his hand that series. He had an injury, and then Sandberg went down. We had quite a few injuries, and there was, I think, three games in a row we played with 5D. And I know we had a pretty young D corps, and like looking around, I was probably the oldest and had the most AHL games out of everyone by like a decent amount, which is pretty rare for a second year guy. So it was kind of that. I felt like we kind of needed that, and my goal is to help the team win however I can. That's kind of the motto for any hockey player. And I kind of felt that we as a team, we needed someone to step up, be a bit of a leader, and just kind of like a reliable calming presence, if you will, back there. So I think that's kind of when it started clicking. And then I kind of liked my game before that too, but when I was kind of playing in that role, I kind of liked how I was feeling and how I was playing in that role. And then I guess kind of build on it from there.
Johnny, you talked about that time where you saw some of your, you know, members of the D corps go down. I think that was probably around the time where you had that game where you played, you know, something like 35 plus minutes that one time. I want to ask like what that was like playing that much in a game, but also just having to earn that trust from the coaching staff. Like, that must have been a pretty good feather in your cap, you know, getting that trust from Eric Dubois that you can play that high amount of minutes. I'm sure you don't want to do that every night, granted, but what was that like?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I think you're always looking for ice time. And I will say the one thing that was nice about the game is we won the game. So you don't want to be playing 35 minutes or whatnot and get blown out 6-0. So it was good that we won that game, which is our main goal. But for me personally, that game, I just remember Doobie had to talk to me before the game saying, like, kind of to be smart and that he is going to use me a lot. So I kind of knew going in that's what the scenario was going to be like. And then I just remember every, whether it be a TV timeout or between shifts, like, I wasn't too vocal on the bench that game because I would get back and I would just try and conserve my energy. Like, I wasn't trying to yell down the bench and get everyone going. I was just trying to keep my breaths and kind of keep a rhythm. And that's the good part about it is, like, obviously you might not be able to, like, join the rush or lead the rush every shift, but you get a really good rhythm going. And then I just kind of feel like that's kind of when confidence grows. And you've seen it not just with myself, but with a lot of guys this year. Once you get some confidence and then you kind of get a little more trust in the coaching staff and you feel like you get a bit of a longer leash, that's when you're free to play. And not free to play as in making stupid plays, but free to play as in you're not second guessing yourself. You're just kind of flowing out there.
You know, Johnny, one of the things that we saw this season in terms of D pairings was that you and Dylan Sandberg played consistently together. And I just wonder, at what point did you guys kind of realize, hey, we got a pretty good chemistry here. We complement each other. And was that something you kind of recognized in advance, or was it something that the coaching staff put you together and then it just kind of naturally started to form?
Yeah, I think it kind of happened naturally because especially with D pairings, they kind of throughout the course of a game can get switched up. So we'd play together here and there. I think we played maybe a couple games in Laval early together, but then it got switched up again. But then we had kind of right in the middle of the year, we started playing together consistently. And then when you play with a guy consistently for a lot of games in a row, that's when you really kind of see, like, feel his tendencies. And then there's just a good trust, there's a good trust to know that kind of like that same playing freely, flowing kind of thing. There's a trust between you two to know we're going to have each other's back. We're going to work to get open for each other or work to get back for each other. And then us both being like bigger guys, we know we can kind of shut down the other team's top line if they need or whatnot. So, it was great playing with him. And yeah, I think that kind of built naturally. It's not like we ever like sat down and talked to each other like, wow, you know, we have great chemistry. But I know that's something that I felt, and I could see him feeling it too. And then we both kind of elevated our game, and it was perfect.
Johnny, as you look towards kind of your future and building to where you want to be, everyone wants to get to the NHL. I was wondering, like, you see a guy like Logan Stanley kind of make that jump this year, and not only make that jump and kind of bounce back and forth, but he was on the Jets. Does that kind of give you an example to follow as you look towards maybe at some point making your own jump?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really happy for Stan and to see what he did. Yeah, like you said, is kind of like an example. It's encouraging. And I know he's worked hard and earned it the hard way as well. I mean, he was a first round pick, and a lot of times guys with first round picks kind of just expect things, like, not expect things, but you tend to see them make a jump early. And I know he had to work for it a couple years in the American League before he had to make that. And I've talked to him about it when he was on our team last year. And so he had to earn it as well. And so he's definitely set, yeah, a good example. And something that I can learn from it is he kind of, like, he wasn't second guessing himself when he got that opportunity. Like, he worked hard on his game at the Moose, and when he got that opportunity with the Jets, he made sure that he took that opportunity. So that's something I want to do. If that opportunity ever comes my way, is just kind of grab a bull by the horns, just like Stan did.
Johnny, there are a lot of really good moments, I think, for this Moose team this year. One of the guys said yesterday, I guess, during the end of year availabilities, you weren't really sure what we were going to get, you know, when you look at the team on paper. But at the end of the season or in the second half of the season, when you went on that 13, you know, game point streak, the longest point streak in the American Hockey League, just, I know you weren't able to play all 13 games in there, but just what was that like for the team? What was the atmosphere like around the team? And just how much fun was that for the team, you know, despite, you know, all the COVID-19 restrictions and all that other outside stuff going on?
Yeah, dude, it was a ton of fun. I'm not going to lie. I got to play, I think, most of those, a good chunk of those 13. And I've never been a part of anything like that, I don't think. Maybe in junior a while ago, maybe like 5-6 years ago. But I haven't had that feeling of just coming to the rink and then things are rolling. And that's just a ton of fun. And then when we had those breaks, we'd have like skill days. We'd have like 3-on-3 tournaments. Like the coaches did a great job of keeping it fun too. And like when you're winning, you're having fun. It's just the game becomes like it slows down a little bit, becomes a little easier to play. So I had an absolute blast, and I could feel it. I know everyone did. We had a group of guys who loved being together. It's a shame it was COVID, so we couldn't hang out outside the rink too much. But it was just too much fun to put into words, Goose.
And, you know, Johnny, it's going to be hard to follow that one up, but, I mean, now that you know roughly, you have an expectation of when next season is going to go, does that make it a little bit easier? Because I remember, like I said, when I spoke to you in the fall, I think it was difficult because you didn't know. There was uncertainty. But now you have a little bit more. You have kind of that light at the end of the tunnel. I know you're dealing with an injury, but does that make it a little bit easier for you to be, okay, this is what I know what my summer is going to look like. I have some sort of – I can set goals for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it does at least. I don't know. Maybe it's different for everyone, but for me, I'm a kind of guy who I like to sit down and put a plan together and just kind of have that structure so I know where I'm aiming for, like when I'm trying to peak by, like all those things. For me, that helps a lot. It kind of keeps me on track and just kind of gives me peace of mind. Like last year, not knowing when you're going to play, for me, it was more like an anxious feeling than anything, just the uncertainty of not knowing. So yeah, for me, setting together a plan and having some structure really is going to help me out this summer, I think.
Johnny, I'm going to bequeath my question to one of the folks in the chat who is wondering, what's your pregame meal? And I'm going to preface that by saying at home, because I know on road it's pretty set, but at home you're chilling on your own. What's the pregame meal? What's the go-to?
Well, a pregame meal at home, the team actually gives to us too. So the
team. And I should know that because I eat it all the time.
But I was going to say, I thought you ate it, Finger. Yeah.
I have never once passed up a free meal. So,
yeah. I don't blame you. They're good meals. But yeah, chicken, a little bit of salmon, rice, sweet potato. This is so basic. I wish I had something cool. I used to have cookies before games, but I cut that out. Pro season, too many games. I can't be having two cookies before.
76 cookies a year.
Yeah.
It's like a weekend for me.
Yeah, college, I used to do that, only 30 games. But, pretty standard. I'm lactose intolerant, so I don't eat cheese. That's the only thing.
That's a tough one. Yeah, that's a tough one.
But I'm not like a light eater. Like, I'll eat it as much as I can fit into my stomach. Like, I like feeling fueled up, you know.
Hope Kyle wasn't listening to that cookies part though, eh?
No, that was in college. I don't do it anymore.
good answer.
He's reformed now.
Yeah, his body's a temple.
Johnny, what's the plan for the offseason now? I think obviously the first thing would be to get, you know, fully healthy and back to 100%. But once that's all said and done, what's the plan for yourself? Just sort of kicking back and relaxing after a super, you know, condensed season, or is it going to be right back in the gym and getting ready for next season?
Yeah, I'll do a bit of both. Like Dave was saying, now that I know kind of when to plan for next year, I'll do a bit of relaxing early, like May, June, kind of letting things heal up and taking like a physical and mental break. Like the season can be a grind sometimes mentally. So taking like a load off that way. And then pretty much kicking it right back into high gear. I'm kind of a person where if I'm not doing something, like I don't feel right. Like I always want to be working towards like my goal. Like I'm pretty driven. So I'm going to take a little bit of time to relax and heal up. And when everything's good, then I'm going to be training, skating again, and yeah, having some fun doing it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Johnny. We appreciate that. Have a great summer, and I'm sure we'll talk to you very soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys. And you guys have a great summer.
See you, Kobe.
See you, Kobe.
All right. There goes Johnny Kovacevic, the Jets 2017 third rounder, who's made quite an impression on a number of people, big body on that right side, and had a really good second year of pro, and obviously, unfortunately, ended a little early due to injury. But, you know, I think a lot of people took notice of that name, and they're paying attention. Another name that people are paying attention to, one that maybe wasn't as well known to Jets fans because he kind of came out of nowhere in the sense that nobody knew about him because he wasn't drafted by the Jets, but he has certainly made a name for himself. That's Jeff Mellott. And Jeff is joining us from back home in Ontario. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, good. How's it going, Dave?
Very good. Thanks for asking. And you know what, Jeff, you had a rookie season in the AHL that was, you know, took everybody by storm. I mean, maybe not yourself, but a lot of us were paying attention. We're impressed by what you were able to accomplish as in your first year pro. You transitioned from the college game to pro, and you just seemed to seize the opportunity that Pascal Vincent's coaching staff gave you. So maybe just start by reflecting on the season that was 14 goals, 6 assists for you.
Yeah, I think a big part of it had to do with kind of the opportunity I was given right away. You know, I came in and was, you know, given a shot up on the first line, and with Nathan Todd and a couple of centermen cycling through there. And I think just we ended up playing well together and ended up working out for the better. But I think in terms of the year in whole, it was just, you know, great to get that first year of professional hockey under my belt. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
What was it like when you got onto that line with Nathan Todd? And I mean, you had David Gustafson and CJC's kind of roll through there, Cole Perfetti one night. But when you got linked up with Nathan, when did it click for you guys that this was going to be a duo that would work?
Yeah, I don't know. I think in one of those early series, maybe our first trip to Belleville, we kind of really saw how well we played together. But I think it was just throughout the whole year, a great combination of hard work and, you know, Nathan having a great shot and me liking to work down low and kind of get him the puck in the slot and you know, all of us just kind of being on the same page almost without really having to try. So I think I don't really know if there was any specific time where I was like, okay, this is going to work. But I think just gradually throughout the year, we really found, you know, our skill sets kind of complementing each other really well.
Before I get into my question, Jeff, I just got to say, I love the hat. Love the hat. I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah.
I was looking at going, is that what I think?
I got to give a shout out to my Aunt Chris. My Aunt Chris was the one who got this for me. Comments on all the Instagram, so just know that well.
Love it. My question for you, I mean, we talked about it with, you know, Coach Pascal and, you know, even just Johnny a little while ago, but just for the fans who weren't able to see it, just talk about the camaraderie that you guys really had together. I know it was two dressing rooms, Jets room and Moose room, but just to the camaraderie that you guys had, whether it was, you know, at the hotel room or on the ice, just it seemed like a really tight knit group this year.
Yeah. And it's weird, right? Cause we came into the year thinking like, we're not going to be able to go out for team meals on the road. We're not going to be able to get together away from the rink. But honestly, I think it was this perfect storm of not being able to hang out with anybody outside of the rink. So when you get to the rink, all you want to do is like catch up, and all you want to do is be at the rink all day, and all you want to do is like be in the gym with guys, be like in the therapy room with guys, doing everything together. So we had a great combination of guys, you know, in their first year, just excited to be playing professional hockey, and a great combination of older guys being extremely welcoming. And I think when you have everybody that wait for, you know, 9 months to play hockey all year, a 10 month off season, everybody's just so excited to be part of, you know, a winning culture, a winning group. And I think it just worked out so well in the sense that everybody was on board from day one, and it made it an absolute blast.
You know, Jeff, is there one memory that stands out? I mean, this is such a unique year and you guys had so many unique situations thrown your way, but is there one thing that stands out to you in your first year as a pro that really kind of stood out amongst all these other memories that you created?
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy to think back on the year because it almost doesn't even feel like it's over yet. It feels like, you know, we're going to go play another series this weekend and pick up right where we left off. But I think, one of the coolest things that we were able to do as a team is make the Iceplex our home. Because obviously everybody wants to be playing in Bell MTS and everybody wants to be playing in the big rink. But for us, the facility there behind the locker room doors, it's such an amazing facility. And we're so grateful to have that, at our disposal all year. And I think just being able to make the Iceplex our home rink for that, that I think 17 game stretch was a lot of fun and something guys will never really have a chance to do again. And something we're always going to remember for sure.
As you look forward to this summer, Jeff, how do you build on the season that you had? Obviously, a lot of success with the Moose this year, but how do you take it to that next step for next season?
Yeah, I think my goals for this summer are to, get stronger, get faster, build on conditioning. I mean, this was the first year in a while I've played, a good chunk of minutes every night. And I think that's something that if I want to play at the next level, I'll really have to focus on. So I think, refining those fine skills and the stick handling, the passing, those small area plays will definitely be a big focus, but also that conditioning and making sure I can play as much as they're willing to have me play on any given night. So hard to think about what the summer's going to look like only being home for 2 days now, but it's nice to have a little chunk here to kind of make a game plan for the summer and focus on those things.
One of the most fun parts of the season for me anyways was being a part of that 13 game point streak that you guys went on, Jeff. I mean, you could just tell like the energy in the room was just up, and you could tell on the ice just by the way you guys were buzzing around out there. I'm not sure if you ever had a streak or a point streak like that during your playing career so far, but just to be a part of something like that with this team, what did that mean to you?
It was a blast. Like, you were showing up to the rink every day knowing that everybody was going to work their tail off to put the team in the best situation possible and fight for those points. And it's hard, right? Like, it takes a lot of maturity out of a group to have put that effort forward every day when there's no playoffs, there's no, there's nothing that you're really tangibly playing for at the end of the year. So I think it just said a lot about the group we had in our locker room that, guys were willing to come in and work every single day, especially in those big breaks between series. It's kind of a weird year where we would play, four games in like 6 or 7 days. And then we would have this 7 day break and you really needed guys to stay focused and stay motivated. And I think the group did a great job of that. And it made it that much more fun when we kind of went on that run at the end of the year. So, in terms of what it means to me, it just made the year that much more enjoyable for sure.
And Jeff, I think that's a point that bears repeating, that you guys didn't have playoffs to play for. And yet every single night guys were sacrificing themselves and sacrificing for their teammates to win games. And sure, of course, you want to maybe play for your next contract or prospect, whatever it is. The guys want to still, they have a reason to play. There's still an incentive to play, but it's still not easy when you don't have that ultimate prize because you're a hockey player and you want to win something at the end of this, right? So how much of a testament is that to you and your teammates that you guys were able to push through and keep playing as hard as you did and go on that streak when, again, like I said, there wasn't that end, prize, if you will, of something to play for.
Yeah. I think it, just speaks volumes to, again, the group we had. I think everybody was just, like you said, willing to sacrifice, willing to, put their bodies on the line every night. And I think it was just genuinely because guys wanted to perform for each other. Guys wanted to, make that extra effort. Guys wanted to, finish checks, finish scoring opportunities, defend. Like, guys were willing to do all of that just because I think we had a great group and we all clicked really well. And it just kind of naturally happened. Nobody had to really beg us to put in that effort every night. And I think we just had a great combination of guys willing to work hard and guys willing to encourage each other.
Jeff, I think one of my favorite moments of the season was your overtime winner when you're celebrating. Fetz comes, or Cole Perfetti comes ripping around. You grab him and then start shaking him around like a rag doll. So take us through that moment and what you were thinking when you just had him up and were launching him up in the air.
Well, it was a great play by Cole and kind of a weird scenario where Belleville ended up bringing the puck into their own zone offside, and it kind of created this chaos where Fetz had a great opportunity to take the puck wide and make a crazy high IQ hockey play, and fake a shot and slide it right over to me where, you know, guys were behind the play thinking that it was offside and a whistle was going to go. And I had a pretty easy tap in. So I think everybody was just surprised that everything went wrong at the right time. And when, you know, Fetz jumped in the air, it just kind of felt natural to just kind of throw him around a little bit and enjoy. And we, you know, we just had such a great time playing like those games at the Iceplex. Like we just, everyone again, like it's so easy to say, but we were just so close and everybody was just having a blast because I think, you know, you wait 10 months to do what you love and everybody's like locked up in this pandemic lockdown and you finally get to run free and go play a hockey season. So I think, you know, it was just us having a blast out there and scoring goals and winning hockey games. It was a lot of fun.
Now that you've had just a little bit of time, Jeff, just to sort of kick back and do a little bit of reflecting, what will sort of go down as, I guess, your favorite moment of the season? I'm not sure if it was you to be launching Cole in the air, but what would be your favorite part of the season for you personally?
I don't know. I think one of like the really, really fun moments was we had a game against Belleville and I ended up getting in a fight at the end of the game and I skated off the ice and Jimmy Olney is recently out with a hand injury, a wrist injury. And someone, I think it was Brett Davis, just said like, Jeff, did you have an assist tonight? Did it, like realizing kind of, we all realized at the same time that I got a Gordie Howe hat trick that night. And I didn't even realize, but Jimmy, just his face like lit up and he's like, I've been waiting 7 years to get a Gordie Howe hat trick. Like this is like, and we all just erupted and had a good time. And, you know, it's just, that's probably one of those funny moments where everyone's just happy for each other. And we're just so excited to be playing hockey again. So I think that's probably not but one of the memories that I'll have for a while.
You know, and I guess Jeff, I'll let you go on this one, but what was your impression of Manitoba, Winnipeg before you came here and after having been here in this unusual year for the last 4 or 5 months?
Yeah. You know, I didn't really have much of an impression on Winnipeg other than the freezing cold weather. I was coming from Naples, Florida. I was down playing with the Everblades for a couple of games. And I flew up here. I was wearing shorts on the flight up here and I touched down to -40 degree weather in Grand Forks, North Dakota. So I think that's the only impression I had coming in. But I think, now that I've been part of the organization for a year and kind of seen the involvement, I wish it would have been a year where we could have had more community involvement because everything I've seen is just how great the fans are, how supportive the fans are and how awesome that can make, how much that can elevate a year, how much more fun you can have, when the community is involved in everything. So I think the organization itself did a great job of keeping the community involved, even though we weren't able to have them in person. But I think that, moving forward, that's just going to be something that's going to add to the experience.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much, Jeff, and have a great summer.
Yeah, you too, guys. Awesome.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
There goes Jeff Malott. But you know what? We're just running back to back to back to back because it's not – we're just going to end with Jeff, and we're going to welcome in Dylan. So we're going to be welcoming Jets 2017 second-round draft pick, Dylan Sandberg, who just completed his first season as a pro hockey player. Hello, Dylan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I mean, you just finished. And when I say just, it's fresh off the ice, just on Sunday. But you know, what was your impression? You know, you're a college guy and you come and you play your first year, such an unusual year with this pandemic and all the restrictions that were imposed on you as a hockey player, as a person, as all of us, obviously, but on you specifically. And so what were your impressions of your first year as a pro hockey player?
I enjoyed it. You know, I wasn't really sure what to expect coming into it. And, especially with the COVID situation going on, it's pretty tough because, you know, you're not able to do the normal things you can, like see your teammates outside the rink. So lots of alone time in that aspect. So you got to find some stuff to do. But on the hockey side of things, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. But coming into it, I felt pretty comfortable. And, you know, I after training camp, I felt really good. So I just figured I'd have fun with it because, you know, we weren't really sure if this season was actually going to happen. So I was really happy it did. So.
Sammy, you play most of the season with Johnny Kovacevic, especially the second half. What were you able to learn from him to push your game to a new level?
Yeah, you can take a lot from him. He's a great player. He's really smart, and he had a great year this year. So, you know, when you're playing with a guy that's playing with a lot of confidence like that, you know, it's just makes a lot of the game a lot easier. And, you know, it's very unfortunate for him to see him go down, for the last few games, but, you know, it just, he made it a lot easier just having the little conversations with him outside the rink or like, after practice or whatnot, after a game on the bench, you know, just having that, that little chat and, building some chemistry as well. So, he's a great guy, and I was fortunate enough to be able to meet him in previous development camps as well. So,
I also want to touch on Eric Dubois there, Dylan. I mean, as your first pro season, you know, you obviously will rely on your coaches just to give you a little bit of insight into the pro game. And what did Eric mean just in your first pro season here with the Moose?
Well, he was awesome, you know, especially with the penalty kill as well, and with the defenseman, you know. I felt like I learned a lot from not just him, but as well as the other coaches. You know, they were all very supportive, and you know, I felt like they're all pushing for everyone to have success. So, you know, that's good to see as well. You know, especially with a lot of the practice days where you split up with defensemen and forwards, that's a huge day, or, you know, where you can obviously learn a lot and you can watch other guys and, you know, see what they're doing. And, you know, I feel like all the coaches were really good this year. And, you know, I feel like they really progressed me in my development.
Well, and that was going to be my question, Dylan, was about that idea of progression. You know the kind of player you are in college, and you came into this first, like I said, your first pro season. What elements of your game do you feel really did develop? What areas did you feel like, okay, I got way better in here, which is where I needed to improve?
I feel like gap control, and I feel like I was jumping up more in the rush as well. More often than college, you know, I take more chances and, but still be, you know, patient with everything. You know, Coach Pascal said, for the defenseman, he really harps on making sure we have that gap control, and, you know, it makes it our job easier as well. And, you know, it helps the forwards out as well. And, you know, I just try to take as much as I could get from this year. And, you know, I was just really happy to be able to play, but, you know, I feel like it was a good year, and you know, it was a good group of guys, so couldn't be more happier.
Going off of what you were saying there, we hear so much about how important gap control is and things like that. How much more difficult does that get with the increased pace and how quickly guys are coming at you on the rush in the pro game?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. You know, as you go up levels, you know, the speed increases and guys are a lot stronger, so. You have to be more cognizant of that, but I felt like, you know, it's a little bit different in the first few games, but then once you kind of get used to it, it becomes easier as well. And but really, like, sometimes when you don't have good gap control, you really understand, you know, why it is important to have good gap control. So I feel like when the coach is really harping on that and showing video, it really helped.
You had a big part in the 13 game point streak that this team had. You know, you were playing some pretty solid minutes. You're chipping in. You had a bit of a point streak going on near the end of the season there as well. I know you talk about not being a big point getter, so to speak. You let your defensive abilities do the talking, but just that 13 game point streak that you guys went on, just to sort of wrap up the year. You know, not even thinking about those last couple games against Belleville, but just that 13 game point streak. What was that like for you to be a part of?
It was awesome. You know, I think at that point that was after our long break, so in the middle of the year. And you know, the guys, I feel like once we started that second half of the year, we you know, decided to just have fun. Everyone was kind of connecting, and we had a great group there, and guys were enjoying coming to the rink and having fun with practices. And you know, I think that's really where it built and came from. But you know, it was just awesome to be a part of, and you know, it just made the game more fun.
Dylan, is there one memory that you will take away from this unique year? I mean, again, like I said, this is a year unlike any other, and hopefully back to normal next year, and we don't have to think about condensed schedules and restrictions and all that other stuff. But is there one memory that you can take away from this 2021 season, your first as a pro, that, you know, like I said, a little higher than all the others?
Yeah, I thought about this question. I hopped on when Jeff was on. So I heard you guys ask him the same question. So
was it your first goal?
And I'd have to go with the mic'd up. I've never actually done that before. So that was interesting. I wasn't really sure what to expect coming into it. And, you know, I was like, you know, I'll give it a shot to see what happens. And, you know, I actually had fun with it and enjoyed it. And so, yeah, I'd probably say that.
Not as many chirps at you as I was expecting, though, I'll be honest.
No, yeah, which I, hey, I'm fine with that. So, but, no, it was good. It was a lot of fun, so.
Well, now I got it. So you're mic'd up and you go into that practice. Are you sitting there thinking, okay, well, now I got to think up some crazy stuff to say so they'll have stuff? Or is it you just turn off the brain and let whatever happens happen?
To be honest, I just kind of turned off the brain and just didn't even think about the mic. Just try to keep it as natural as possible. And, you know, it ended up working out pretty good. But, you know, I had fun with it. And, you know, it's fun to trip some of the guys, especially, you know, Perfetti. And then there's a funny moment where I high stick Jeff in the face, but not so funny. But
it was really funny.
That was a tough one to have on there. It's a bad day, but no, that was.
I'm sure Jeff thinks it was hilarious. Yeah. I've kind of lost. I think it's my question now. I'm gonna roll forward anyways. I mean, folks might have missed it. Kind of slipped in right at the end of the season there yesterday, but you end up joining the Jets for the playoffs here. So, what are you looking forward to that opportunity? Maybe get into some skates with some of these guys.
Well, yeah, I was fortunate enough in the beginning of the year to be in the taxi squad and kind of see how guys how the whole NHL works and how guys handle themselves and. Well, that was just a good experience and very eye-opening for me. So to be back and to know a lot of guys from early on in the year is nice as well. But, I'll kind of just take this time and, really make sure that I am putting an impression on the coaches and whatnot and, cheering on the guys. And, hopefully nobody gets injured. But, if I just got to make sure that I'm ready if the chance ever comes up. But, no, I'm just looking forward to it. It's my first playoffs, first NHL playoffs, so I'm really happy to be a part of it.
I know you're obviously focused on the Winnipeg Jets and, staying ready if the time does come where you do need to draw into a situation. But when the offseason does roll around for you, what is sort of that going to look like for you? I mean, it is such a condensed schedule. It's, nothing really like the college schedule, just how many games you've really played. But when that offseason does roll around, what's the plan for you? Is it going to be just, getting right back into the gym right away? Do you take some time to sort of decompress? Just what's the plan for you?
I'll probably take some time to decompress, but I'll be heading home after the season. And hopefully my dad and I will be able to go on a fishing trip up to Lake of the Woods. Looking forward to that and, seeing all my friends and family and, really looking forward to that. So I'll take some time off, but, eventually after a little bit, I'll get back into it. And, I'm fortunate enough to be able to, work out and train with guys like Forbert and Pionk. So that's really helpful as well. So.
Well, Dylan, I was going to ask you another question, but now that you went fishing, I have to go that route and ask you about that. Is it muskie fishing? Is it walleye fishing? What is the fishing of choice when you go up to Lake? I'm assuming you're talking about the Minnesota side of the Lake of the Woods.
Yeah, Minnesota side, but no, my dad and I are big walleye fishermen, so we love getting up there. We went twice this past summer because we had time since there was obviously no season. So we had a lot of fun up there, caught a lot of fish, and I was able to, in June of this past summer, I was able to catch a personal record 30-inch walleye, so pretty excited about that, and caught a couple other nice big fish, but and my dad just enjoy fishing and kind of getting away from everything. And, I'm really looking forward to it.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, go for it. Go for it.
No, I was just going to ask you, you had such a passionate fan base with the Bulldogs and you didn't have any fans this year. What was that like? Because again, everybody had to deal with it. Now we're seeing it in the US. They're having the fans come back in, but like, what was that like playing in an empty building?
It kind of brought me back to my days of, like youth hockey where there's not that many people in the building when you're young growing up. But, no, it was definitely weird. I feel like you don't notice it as much when you're playing in the Iceplex cause it's such a condensed barn. It's really loud in there. So, but in the early on in the year when he played in Bell MTS, that was definitely different. You're looking up in the stands and it's just completely empty. So, obviously the fans bring that atmosphere and, we'd love to have that and, hopefully next year we can get that back.
And when you look back on this season and you look at your game from game number one to game number 36 of the season, or I guess what it would have been for you, 32, what do you think changed the most for you throughout this season?
Ooh, tough one.
Always really delving in there.
Yeah, I'd probably say I feel like
that either means it's a really good question or a really bad question.
I think it's a good question. No, I think I wasn't really sure what to expect coming in. And, you know, I feel like the more games I played, the more confident I became and the better I felt out there. So I think just building my confidence and just understanding that, you know, this is where I belong and, you know, I'm here, so I might as well do my best. And, you know, that helped me build my confidence and push me forward. So I felt like that was a really big part in my year and hopefully keep that moving forward.
And Dylan, is that one of the things that people sometimes from the outside don't really understand? Everybody wants a player, especially a prospect like yourself, to be in the NHL yesterday. Everybody, you know, that's the way the society we live in. It's instant gratification. You have to have us get drafted and then finish up college or whatever, and then right into the NHL. But the reality is that doesn't happen for so many guys. So many guys have to go in through the AHL, get that experience, learn from coaches, learn in an environment that's not as high pressured, obviously, as the NHL. So can you see now, I mean, again, you're a young guy and I know you're going to want to play in the NHL, but do you see the value gained by being in the NHL, in the American Hockey League, sorry, and having that opportunity?
Well, absolutely. You know, it's it gets you a little bit of a taste of what pro hockey is all about. And, you know, it's especially here in playoffs, you know, it's a different animal with the NHL. So, just to be able to, you know, it was nice to be able to get that little experience, like get a little taste in the beginning of the taxi squad and, you know, talk to a lot of the NHL players, you know, just kind of pick their brain and about hockey and whatnot. And then be able to go down and play some games in the AHL. You know, we had a good group of guys, so I was thankful for that. And, you know, good coaching staff. And you know, I feel like it's definitely important, you know, it's for a lot of guys, that's the route that you have to take. And, you know, for the odd occasion, there's stars like McDavid or any of those other guys that go straight to the NHL. But, no, it's definitely a good part of my development. And, you know, that's the path that that worked out best for me.
Well, Dylan, hold on. We got someone in the comments section who wants to get their two cents in. I think it's your mom. She's not happy. She says, "Why don't you want to spend time with her?" She also wants to fish, so you're gonna have to take your mom as well. She's not happy about being left out, so it'll have to be a parent fishing trip, not just a you and father son.
Family fishing trip for one of them, and then a boys trip for the second one. My dad and I.
All right. Well,
maybe give her a call when you're off the line with us here too.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll call me.
All right, Dylan. Well, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. And enjoy your time up with the Jets.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Abby.
All right. Well, there goes Dylan Sandberg. This has been rolling along. When you can have parents in the chat speaking their sons, or, you know, that's a pretty good opportunity. Thank you for that. I know that was it was very funny. I saw you see it. I saw it, but he was answering. I was trying not to lose focus, but it was pretty funny to have that happen. So, no, real good conversation with Jets 2017 second round pick Dylan Sandberg. And now we're going to go from Dylan Sandberg to general manager of the Manitoba Moose, Craig Heisinger. Heisinger, how are you?
Dave, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. What's going on?
Not much. We've got our end of season roundtable underway. We've talked to head coach Pascal Vincent. We've talked to three of your players, and now we're gonna wrap things up with you. So, I mean, this has been a season like no other, and you're at the head of organizing this. So, if you just had to reflect on the season in its totality for this Manitoba Moose Club, what are your thoughts?
I think we've been talking about it for a while, and I still don't know that we have it sorted out. It's hard to put into words. I think at the end of the day, I think it's one of the best development years we've had. And I'm really surprised to say that because it was a, you know, it took a while to get the season going and to get formed. We had a schedule. Then we didn't have a schedule because Calgary joined in late. We had a group of players, didn't really know what we had. We sort of maybe had three different groups over the course of a year. I think it proved the importance of quality coaching and guys, you know, pulling on the rope in the same direction all the time. I hate that quote, but it's the only thing that came to mind. But I think it was a remarkable year, and I think we're going to reflect back on way – I think we're going to reflect back when we have way better teams and ask why can't this group work as hard as that COVID team? Because that was the one thing. We weren't going to win every game every night, but you know what? We never had to guess what we were going to get. We were going to work as hard as we could. Didn't matter if we had a small lineup, a medium lineup, or a big lineup, a good lineup, a bad lineup. You knew we were going to work. And I think early in the season, we beat teams that their rosters were better than us just because, well, we got better goaltending and we outworked them. I think we won in the middle of the season because our roster got better, but we just kept working. And I think we won at the end of the season, despite losing quite a few guys to injury, which we'd avoided all year, quite a few guys to taxi squad, a couple of guys to the World Championships. And we just kept playing. We just kept playing and we worked, and it's a novel concept, that work ethic. But I can't say enough good things about the group of players we had and our coaches and our trainers that provided a safe environment for everybody to get to play safe in and get the whole season in.
Zinger, when you look at this season and you say it's one of the best development seasons that you've had, is it just a combination of everything that has to come together between just the right group of guys, the right coaches at the right time, even the circumstances? Just does it all pile in together, or is there some parts of it that come out to make it that year?
I don't know. I've been doing this a long time, and if you could bottle it every year, you'd win the Calder Cup every year. You know, lots of years you think you got it figured out, and nothing ever works. You know, this year I wouldn't even pretend to tell you we had it figured out. I mean, I watched some of those games. I think the most remarkable part about the whole season was the first 12 games when we came out of it 6-6. And we rolled in. I think we were 2-2 leaving Winnipeg after the four-game set against the Marlies. And we went in and we won the first two games in Laval. And we were 4-2. When I say it's one of the best development years we've had, and I don't just say that from a concept of our prospects. I think we had all kinds of guys develop. Nathan Todd, who had one goal on multiple call-ups with multiple different teams, finished the season with 32 points in 36 games. Jeff Malott came out of nowhere to a certain degree. I thought one of our most valuable players really early in the season was Weston Michaud, because he drew penalties. We weren't an overly skilled team, but our team could move the puck. So if we got good goaltending, we'd be in the game late. If we could draw a penalty late, we could get a power play goal to tie it or maybe win it. That happened two or three times. And if you go back and look, it was Weston that drew the penalties. So I think from that perspective, it was really interesting. And I think without singling out one guy, I thought our season really turned towards the middle when Christian Vesalainen and David Gustafson came down. The Jets were in Montreal. We were in Ottawa. But I thought they both came down. Vess was injured when he arrived, didn't play right away. But Gus added some size and some strength to our roster up the middle right away. And I thought our centers, our strength up the middle was good. Our goaltender was good. Our defense was good. But we lacked that one big securing piece up the middle that we could start with the puck. And I thought Gus established that his very first game. About 2 minutes into that game against Belleville, we were on the power play. He won the draw and we scored. And for me, that's where we as a group thought, okay, if we keep working hard, we're going to be able to make some noise here.
Zinger, I want to move off the ice just for a second, but, you know, Daniel and I are currently sitting here in the balcony at Bell MTS Iceplex, but what can you just say about the team here at Bell MTS Iceplex and the operations staff? You and I have had conversations about this before, but just the job that they did, you know, just to make this an AHL building where we can have games and, installing the glass, even bringing up the banners like we have behind us. Just what can you say about the job that they did to make this rink what it is right now?
Well, I mentioned on our business integrations call today what a great job David Sattler and his crew did, and thanked them on the integrations call what a great job they did at the Iceplex. I mean, what a great environment there. Like, is it great playing in front of no fans? No, but was the environment there once it got going way tighter, way quainter, way noisier? It was a great environment to play games, and obviously the facilities were better for us than they were for the visiting team. However, when you go from a safety perspective of it, the accommodations for the visiting team was excellent. They had the whole one hallway of the ACU rink and had nothing but space to stretch out in. If you're the visiting team and you were watching the game, well, you had to sit out in the cold. Was that great? No, it wasn't. But overall, I think we did some things there that are going to work out really good moving forward. I think when we decided to we were going to play there and we decided to brand it, we figured out that the branding's got to stay. Maybe not the same banners that hang there, but that's the home of the Moose and the Jets practice facility. That's where the $8 million complex is attached to the back. It needs to be branded that it's a professional hockey practice facility. And I think the glass and the lighting and the banners and the signage, I think they did a fabulous job. And I think the players really felt at home there. And I mean, you know, as well as I do, when you watch the games real fast and when you watch from that close, it's just better.
You know, and Zinger, one of the things we saw throughout the course of the season was the idea of with the playoffs, and there was uncertainty and we didn't know what it was going to look like. And yet these players still killed themselves on a nightly basis. When you're evaluating talent, and you know, and Pascal brought this up, you know, towards the end of the season, you were doing it without a lot of veterans, about six veterans in your lineup on a lot of nights towards the end. But yet this team still rolled, and you had the 13 game point streak. Is, as an evaluator of talent, how impressed were you by these guys and their willingness to sacrifice for each other during that streak, but just overall throughout the course of the season?
Well, I think if you look at the course of the season, we played the whole season with no captain. We, on a nightly basis, I don't think there was for sure not a game where we played a game with more than three veterans. And if we did, it wasn't more than a handful and probably less than that. I mean, our veterans of note were Tyler Grayovac when he was there, Jimmy Oligny before he got injured, Marco Dano when he came back from being injured. So after that, we have no veteran players. We had no captain, but we had leadership, which was quite remarkable. You know, in the traditional hockey world, you don't have leadership without a captain. Yet we did have leadership. We had everybody contribute, even the youngest players, even, you know, Cole Perfetti at his age. Once he got his legs under him and figured out how to play the game at that level, everybody brought a little bit of something. And that's why I say the development was quite remarkable, because we weren't developing any sort of older, tired veterans. I mean, I go back to that. I don't know how many games he played here, but Tyler Grayovac, he did a remarkable job for us. He was there in the first 12 to 16 games when our lineup was small. It wasn't confident. But yet he took the young guys under his arm, and they weren't even his teammates. He came from Vancouver, but he fit in right away. Ashton Sautner wasn't there long, but he brought leadership. Everybody just pulled the right way, and I wish I had an answer for it, but I don't. And it's a fact. It was a remarkable season from that aspect. We just continually found a way. I know the last little while when I was away and I'd be at scouting a game and I'd get the update on my phone from the AHL when it would buzz when somebody scored it. It would be remarkable to me that we'd grab a quick 2-0 lead, because I'd looked at the lineups before the game started and, you know, thought, this is going to be a tough one tonight. We'd find a way to win. And towards the end, you know, early in the season, we won games being outshot badly because our goalie was real good. And we won a lot of games in the second half because, like, our third periods were remarkable. There was a 10-game stretch there where we didn't go a third period without getting more than 17 shots and didn't give up more than seven. You don't lose many games like that. But that says your team buys into what the coaches are doing and that you're a well-conditioned group.
Singer, I want to ask you, maybe not directly about Nathan Todd, but I guess that's where we'll go. I mean, you mentioned he made such strides this year, had an incredible season, but what kind of options does a guy like that open up for himself when he has the season and progress the way that he did?
So I think there's two ways to look at that. I think one is, I think you have to look at all the positives, and I don't think you can discount anything anybody did because everything's relative and the player did it. The one thing about the American League this year is it played at a little bit lower level because of the taxi squads in the NHL. That sucks some of the best players out of the league on a consistent basis. Like guys came down for conditioning stints and played at different times. But on a consistent basis, it allowed for a lot more younger guys to play. That being said, Nathan Todd still did what he did. And I don't think you can take that away from him. He's been a real good player and a real good person for us for kind of the last 2.5 seasons. And there's lots of guys you give opportunity to, but not everybody takes advantage of it. And he took advantage of it right from the start. And I think the reason he got to take advantage from it right from the start is because he put in the work in the summertime. And you can reference a lot of guys taking advantage of opportunity because they put in the work in the summertime. But Nathan Todd's a classic example. His skating can be an issue. And the best comparable for me for Nathan Todd is Jason Jaffrey. Like Jason Jaffrey found a way to be successful in the American League. But on those games when it was two and three nights or whatever, tired, his skating looked awful. And Nathan Todd, a little bit the same. When he got tired towards the end of the season, towards the end of the shift, towards the end of the month, his skating wasn't as good. This year, he was able to play at a high level for all 36 games. I mean, was the schedule better? Sure, it was better. There was more rest time. There was more skill time. There was lots of things that played into some players' favor. But still, you have to do the work. And for me, Nathan Todd, the two biggest examples on for the Moose from a player development perspective of guys putting in the work is Logan Stanley, who played for the Jets all year, and Nathan Todd, who lit up the American League.
One of my favorite moments of the year, Zinger, had to be, you know, one of those guys that was on the taxi squad for an extended period of time, but just Eric Comrie coming down to set the franchise win record. I mean, we've talked so much about what Eric means just to this organization as a whole, but just what did it mean for you to see Eric set that record that was, you know, previously held by Corey Schneider back in Moose 1.0?
Means I'm old because I was there for both of them.
No, but like, I mean, just how incredible was that though? Just
It wasn't me that brought it up this time, Zinger. I'm okay. It's his fault this time.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's your fault, Foster. You're supposed to vet these questions. Like,
he's a loose cannon, Zinger. There's only so much I can do.
I mean, we all think the world of Eric Comrie as a person and as a goaltender, but I think in the lifetime of the Moose, there's an iconic list. Then you add names to it. Sometimes you even take names off it, but Eric Comrie's a very, very special person. And when special people accomplish special things on the ice, it's even better. There's lots of guys that are special players at the time, but you don't feel, I don't know, the passion for their success that you feel for the one you feel invested in people-wise. And what Eric Comrie's been through the last few years is challenging. Is he well paid for some of those challenges? Yeah, he is. And that's fair. And you got to live with those things. That's life as a professional athlete. But he does it with a smile on his face every day, bounces from team to team, goes up, goes down. He is the consummate professional. And somewhere, sometime, there's a special place for Eric Comrie.
No, Zinger, one of the things that, and it's, you know, I'll tie it into what Austin's question was, because it happened in that same game. I think it was the first time that I could recall that we had seen all the Jets, all the defensemen playing in that game were Jets draft picks. And this, so much about this league is about development. And how exciting is it from your perspective, seeing these guys like Heinola, Samberg, Kovacevic, Govanke, Chisholm, and I think Nelson Noje would have been the old guy of that group, But how exciting is it to see these guys come through the AHL and making that next step or taking this step to get to that next level?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there was a lot of guys that really found their footing this year. And I think a lot of it had to do with playing a few less games too and the more practice time. I think you get dinged up just as much, but your recovery time is far better, which is obviously good. But I mean, we've waited. It takes time to you know build a pipeline of prospects, and you know people that don't know that are in lines of work that think they do know put time frames on it. But those type of people have all the answers. They don't know half the questions that go into this kind of stuff. So yeah, it's rewarding to see those guys, but it's one step at a time. They have to do it again. You got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. But it's positive. And I mean, you can never have, there's an old saying from a guy that's older than me, Randy Carlyle, that you can never have too many defensemen. And that's the God's honest truth. And I mean, we lived it this year. One week we'd have 11 defensemen, and then the next week we had to play with four. So you can never have too many D. But I think the development was clearer this year for some reason. I don't know why that is, but it was clearer. It was easier to see. I think the best example, I don't mean to stray away from your question, but I think the best example of clarity was Cole Perfetti. Like, he played that first game and it was like, oh boy, this guy's in over his head. Like, he is going to get killed. You know, a long period of time there was a struggle to play him 5-on-5, like really a struggle. And then but he could contribute a little bit on the power play. Then he'd get a bit more 5-on-5 time, but he contributed more on the power play. And everybody thinks because you're a first round pick, you're just going to get there. And it's a development curve. And everybody develops at a different pace, not as fast as they want to develop, not as fast as you want them to develop, not as fast as the media wants them to develop. But they get there when they're ready. And nobody dictates that other than the players play. And Logan Stanley's a prime example of that. And Cole Perfetti this year, I mean, you watch most of the games, Dave Goose and Foster, you watch the games. I mean, it was the remarkable, the progression of that guy day after day after day. And did he get there? I'm not saying he got there, but I can tell you one thing. He's 1 year ahead development-wise than he would be because he knows what his shortcomings are. You know, he's a bit, you know, like he knows the things he's got to go home and work on this year versus – coming in next year after junior.
Just had myself muted there, but Zinger, when you look at, and even going back, you start to look at that Winnipeg Jets lineup as it starts to fill up with more and more guys who have passed through the Moose. You look at what you're talking about, the development of guys this season. What can you say about the job that Pascal Vincent, Eric Dubois, Marty Johnson, Rick St. Croix, Richard Bouy have done over the last number of years, and especially this season?
Well, I'm not going to say much because they're in contract years, so it would be not wise to say very much. But I mean, I've said it every time I can. I think those guys have done they always do a really good job because you're tasked with a different group of players every year. But I think if you ask those guys, I would think it was maybe the most unsure they were going into a season at the start. And by the midseason, I think it was the most sure they'd ever been about a team because they knew what they were going to get. And Pazzi told me as a coach, that's the best feeling in the world, that you go to the rink in the afternoon and you know the other team's trying to win too, but you know exactly what you're going to get from your group. And we got it every night. I don't think we lost by any disparity, maybe other than the first game against the Marlies and the last game against Belleville. And by the end, we were out of gas, out of players, out of everything. But we put ourselves in that situation. We wanted to get all 36 games in, and you learn from those games. You learn from every game, but the coaches from top to bottom, and Dave mentioned the development of the defensemen. I think that's a credit to all the coaches, but Eric Dubois has done an excellent job. And as much as Logan Stanley's done the work, the strides that he's made over the couple of seasons with Eric is remarkable. I personally thought for the 16 or 20 games that Ville Heinola was in the American League, at least the first 16 games that he played in the row, he was the best player in the Canadian division by far. And it wasn't close, in my opinion. He was the best player. And Ville did the work. I think, and as much as you want to talk about the young defensemen, I don't want to, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the difference that Jimmy Oligny made to that young group, because we weren't exactly blessed with grit and toughness a lot of nights. And Jimmy's always there for his teammates. He makes sure that Billy's going to stay safe. As much as Jimmy is what he is, I don't know that there's a veteran on any other team in the American League that did. There might be better veterans in the American League than Jimmy Oligny, but there's not one that did a better job for his team than Jimmy Oligny did this year for the young defenseman on the Manitoba Moose.
Moving from the coaching staff, Zinger, I also just want to ask you about, you know, the training staff, the medical guys that we have in the organization this year, and what a job they did. I mean, their job was really elevated. I mean, with all the COVID-19 restrictions that the league was really setting out, but just a thought on you on just what they were able to do in keeping all of us safe throughout this year.
Well, obviously with my background, I'm always going to extol the virtues of the trainers. And for a couple of years now, we've kind of actually been a man short on our staff, which is going to get rectified going into next year. But there was a lot of pressure on the trainers this year, and they handled it remarkably, both the equipment side, the medical side, and their assistants on both sides. There was a lot of cleaning to be done, a lot of washing to be done, a lot of things to keep players safe day over day. Did we, as organizations, try to do things to make things easier for them? Yeah, for sure we did. With no fans, we could play afternoon games. We could make sure that if it was an afternoon game, that there wasn't a pregame skate, so they only had to clean once. So, yeah, there was things. I mean, even singling out, moving to the iceplex, was a lot of that had to do with the trainer. So they weren't moving twice and cleaning four different times. They were in one building and cleaning twice, not in two buildings cleaning four times. So the other thing that shouldn't be lost is the commitment by ownership to make this go this year, and to all ownerships in the Canadian division. I don't know that everyone realizes, but we in the American League, we had to follow the exact same protocols as the National Hockey League teams. And when I say the exact same protocols, that's just not water bottles in the dishwashers and the spraying of the gear and all that stuff. That's down to the same hotels. That's down to single rooms. That's down to AC jets, charters. Like, that's a very, very expensive proposition. It cost us more to play 18 road games this year than it's ever cost us to play 30 road games or 36 road games in the past. So the fact that all ownerships in the Canadian division viewed it as an investment versus an expense is a credit to them.
Zinger, we really appreciate all your time this evening, wrapping up the Moose season. And I'll let you go on this one. Is there one moment in particular, one thing that stands out in a completely unique year? I mean, it seems almost shocking to think that it's over, considering it just started, 4 months ago with training camp. But is there one moment or one thing that stands out for you that you'll reflect back on, years from now?
I think just the consistency of this group, and I know I will, because I've said it to Pazzi a couple of times, we're going to say down the road, why can't this group work like the COVID team? There's different guys that are synonymous with different things. Like Benny Sherratt, for instance, is synonymous for a guy that went down to the East Coast League, said, I don't want to be buried here. I said, we're not burying you here. It's up to you. You decide. Sean Heschke was, will he ever figure it out? How many times can you be late to meetings? Will he ever figure it out? He figured it out, Like, can you play in the NHL with Jason Jaffrey skating? Yeah, you can. But there's different things that become synonymous with different guys. This COVID team won't be singled out as an individual player, but the team will be singled out. That's one of the things when the season was winding down, I was speaking to Brad. I said, we have to try to do a team picture of this group because somebody at some point is going to say, who is this COVID team? And it wasn't a bunch of big names. I mean, it clearly wasn't a bunch of big names, but they were a hardworking, really good group of guys that were all trying to find contracts for the most part for next year. And they laid it on the line every night, and God bless them because they're going to get rewarded for it down the road.
All right. Thanks very much, Zinger. We appreciate you joining us and providing your insight on the Manitoba Moose.
All right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks, Zinger.
Thanks, Zing.
People will enjoy this end of season roundtable, give them an opportunity to, you know, catch up on this Manitoba Moose 2021 team, which is a pretty remarkable team. So thank you very much, Daniel Fink, the communications manager, the play-by-play voice of your Manitoba Moose, Austin Saragusa, who is the TV reporter. I'm Dave Minuke from IllegalCurve.com and part of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Appreciate everybody for tuning in and keep bringing you more Manitoba Moose coverage from the folks over at ManitobaMooseHockey.com or IllegalCurve.com. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and have a good night.